On today's show, we have a very, very special episode that many of our listeners have been waiting for quite some time. That's coming up right now on Divine Intervention. So gather up your jackets, move it to the exits. I hope you have found a friend. It's closing time. Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end. John Gennaro, count me in!
One, two, three.
Today's first words come from Semisonic from their hit single Closing Time off the 1998 LP Feeling Strangely Fine. And we are feeling strangely fine today, but the rest of them belong to me. Welcome to Divine Intervention, a self-help podcast about basketball. My name is Dan Devine, and before we get rolling, here are three things that I am grateful for today. Number one, I get paid by Yahoo Sports to write about the NBA and talk about it into this microphone, into that camera, in this studio for the first time, and for the first time since May in the format of a Divine Intervention episode. Pretty good deal. Number two, John C. Reilly. I am just grateful for him. I don't have an arch angle on this. It's just that every time I think of the actor John C. Reilly, it makes me happy. This man gave us Reed Rothschild, Officer Jim in Magnolia, Cal Naughton Jr., Dewey Cox, Dale Dobek, Wreck-It Ralph, Dr. Steve Brule, and Dr. Jerry Buss all in one lifetime.
There you go.
Heater after heater for decades. Thank you very much for your service, John C. Reilly. And number three, as important as all of that, I get to spend part of my day catching up with someone who, well, I mean, let's be honest, we've been catching up every week for 2 years. My guest today is one of the premier news gatherers in our corner of the sports world. A punishingly young man who has proven that you can get anything you want if you are persistent enough, including, it seems, an invitation to Divine Intervention. He is the author of the book Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. His work has appeared at Slam, SB Nation, Sports Illustrated, Bleacher Report, and right here at Yahoo Sports as a senior NBA reporter and my co-host on the podcast, No Cap Room. Friends, a warm welcome for the captain of the NC Armada, Jake Fisher. Jake, thank you so much for being here today. How are you?
My answer is I'm going to give a shout out to the great Dewey Cox.
Absolutely.
Say,
walk hard, everybody.
Walk hard.
That was hard. Good. You got low for
down
that.
Down the lakes, by the shore. That's what I got. That's all I got.
Before this podcast, you had to think about every person you ever met in your life before we could start recording. That's why it took us a little while to get started.
Which, if I will say, the first person I ever met in this life was my twin sister, who... In hanging out with her at, unfortunately, well, for whatever, the Eagles tailgate on Monday.
Okay.
You came up in the topic of conversation.
Oh, no.
Which Dan came to my and my twin sister's 30th birthday party.
It's true.
Real trusted members of the NC Armada will remember. And I was in a porta potty taking something. Well, taking a poop. Taking a poop.
Jake.
I want to be clear. On my phone when the news of Bryce Young being benched for Andy Dalton came out. I laughed to myself thinking, Andy Dalton is definitely older than Bryce Young than you are to me. Tweeted out, go back to the tailgate spot. My brother sees my tweet. We start talking about that. My sister says, that little guy with the glasses is 13 years older than us?
That little guy with the glasses?
But hold on. It's a backhanded compliment because then she goes, holy hell, can I get up on his skincare routine?
Well.
So there you go.
All right.
There you go.
I felt the backhand first, but I will take the compliment after the fact.
It was absolutely a backhanded compliment, but a compliment nonetheless. And thank you for having me. This is a pleasure. And it's an honor. It truly is an honor.
Well, now I feel like I have to end the show by getting the skin, I'm going to deliver the skincare regimen, but also I have to get the shin lengthening surgery from Gattaca to get taller, which Bryce Young should also have.
Yes.
And that would would solve a lot of both of our problems.
It really would.
All right. I've asked you here today, Jake, because, we do a podcast together, so it seemed reasonable. But also, since Divine Intervention started, you have wanted to be on it, and I have held you at arm's length, Heisman style, Bryce Young style.
Yeah.
Why is it that you've wanted to make sure you're on this show despite the fact that we already make a show together and talk like every day?
Because to be honest, when our overlords at Yahoo said they wanted me to make a podcast, I said, I don't want like a Jake Fisher show. I would like a co-host. And so when you got your own show, I was then a little bit like, maybe can I co-host it? But also it was just a great show. And I remember the first time I listened to it, like the format of it and everything, from John Gennaro counting you in to the closing five, I was just like, man, this is really cool. And it'd be nice to be part of one day. So it is nice to be part of it one day.
Well, you are part of it, and we're going to get into it. But first, here on Divine Intervention, we try to always operate from a place of joy. So, Jake Fisher, what is something from the world of basketball, or maybe not basketball, since we're in kind of the quiet part of the NBA calendar, that is bringing you joy this week?
I'm going to try to keep it to the world of basketball because it's been a tough week after probably the worst viewing experience in person at Lincoln Financial Field I've ever had.
Yeah, it's a no-go Birds type situation.
Really tough. And like Jalen Hurts personally is hurting me because I think I was like early on him and now I'm like, I think I was early on being out on him. So
all right, this isn't football 301. Let's keep it moving.
I'm going to say, when I went to the restroom on the way before this.
You simply have to stop talking about going to the bathroom.
Look, I've got IBS. We talk about it on the show.
We do talk about it. It's true. We do talk about it.
I will say, finding out that Miles Bridges is going to record one last album and retire from the rap game is bringing me joy because he's not a good rapper. And
shots fired.
He's a good basketball player, and I'd like him to get back to just playing basketball. That's my answer.
Okay. I mean, that's totally fair. Yeah. Especially in the quiet part of the NBA calendar.
No,
okay.
I'm going to look into the ISO shot. What's bringing me joy is that the whole world now thinks these Nike City Editions suck because I have hated it forever. I don't need powder blue, whatever indie stuff that's going to be a new alteration of it every couple of days. I know it's a money grab. I know people are buying them to wear them at festivals and wear them on the beach, but these jerseys are an eyesore, and it's bringing me joy that people are now on board that these jerseys suck. So there you go.
Yeah, I think our colleague Vincent Goodwill said that none of them were worth a damn. I think that's sort of a consensus opinion, at least on Twitter. And, you know, obviously Twitter is the whole world, so maybe that stands to reason. I have to fall back a little bit on it because you guys can see me in the cameras. I dress like this. So I got to be careful about insulting too many fashion choices that too many other people make. But Jake has a cardigan on. He looks really good. So I think that's a completely fair thing for him to insult. I mentioned earlier we are in the quiet part of the NBA calendar with Media Day and the start of training camp. Still a couple weeks away. But some things have happened recently. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you if they matter in a very quick game that we are calling, cleverly enough, Does This Matter? Jake Fisher, up first.
Yeah.
The Cleveland Cavaliers have agreed to a 3-year, $38 million contract extension with restricted free agent Isaac Okoro, keeping the 23-year-old forward, who was the fifth overall pick in the 2020 NBA draft, under team control through 2027. Cavs keep Okoro, Jake. Does this matter?
Yes. And real trusted, tried and true members of the NCR Armada will recall, we discussed this however many moons ago, that the final ballpark was going to be around the $12 million and average annual value figure that his qualifying offer was, which is why this matters. The fact that it's not the qualifying offer, the fact that the Cavs are continuing to lock down this core, which, you know, who's to say what this core is, as we've discussed at length about what is Evan Mobley? What is Evan Mobley in the context of Jared Allen? What is this team in the context of Donovan Mitchell being extended with all the Darius Garland stuff? But Cleveland does believe that they have as good a shot as any team to unseat Boston in the Eastern Conference this year and to lock all these dudes down after, you know, Okoro particularly in this case, because obviously you asked me about him, shooting 40% from three this past season. And he is their best bet of being that legit wing defender to go up against those guards. And then you look at Philly that obviously has wings, you know, galore now with Paul George and Caleb Martin and et cetera. I think it's like very important to at least get him in at a number that is around the mid-level, which we talked about it with KJ Martin and whoever, you know, this human trade exception thing, which like we're going to need a better phraseology for that.
Not even a little, dehumanizing, like entirely dehumanizing. You just become an entry on a ledger and that's not all that cool.
It is very assetification of players that everyone, I know, criticized Sam Hinkie for doing back in the day. But objectively, once he passes his 6-month thing, it is a pretty movable salary. There were teams like Charlotte and Brooklyn, most notably. There were definitely others too that had interest in him this summer, but those are, I think, the two most that I heard about. I think getting him locked in at that number, there's no one really else like Max Strus and George Niang can shoot it, but they're not going to be, you know, dancing their toes out on the perimeter with Jason Tatum.
Right.
So Yeah, it matters.
Cleveland now has committed to multi-year extensions, as you mentioned, for Darius Garland, for Donovan Mitchell, for Jared Allen, for Max, you know, Max Strus is there long-term. Evan Mobley gets the max now. Isaac Okoro. This is, if nothing else, them saying we need to operate from a stable foundation and say, give ourselves another half year, give ourselves another season, see what this looks like. And if we need to make a move from there, as you mentioned, these are not moves that can't, contracts that can't be moved. So I'm a little bit more skeptical on Okoro than maybe some of those teams that were in the market for him. But generally speaking, if you get a guy who can defend multiple positions, be really good on the perimeter, showed a little bit more juice as a ball handler and, like, you know, complimentary passer last year, a little less than the mid-level, which is going to wind up being what, like 6 or 7% of the salary cap as it keeps going up. Like, that's a deal you can stomach and you can live with. And if he continues to grow, again, only 23 years old, maybe that winds up looking like a bargain down the line. Up next for us, the Sacramento Kings are reportedly bringing in veteran forwards T.J. Warren, Jay Crowder, and Naz Little in for workouts this week, presumably to see if any of them can fill the Harrison Barnes-shaped hole in their roster after the three-team deal that brought them DeMar DeRozan. So, Jake, Kings hunting for forward help. Does this matter?
Name the three players again.
T.J. Warren, baby bubble T.J. Warren, T.J. Warren, Jay Crowder, and Naz Little.
It matters to T.J. Warren, Jay Crowder, and Naz Little. Those guys need work. If you're a veteran and you're working out at this juncture of the season, that means you are just looking for your spot in training camp. That means you're probably many spots down the bench away from playing meaningful minutes.
Right.
I hope those guys get paid. Those guys have all been largely good guys to me in the times I've crossed paths with them. Jay Crowder was lovely after he finally got traded to Milwaukee during his whole Phoenix holdout and just like kind of gave me all the goods because I asked him politely. He politely replied.
Right.
But, I mean, Naz Little was only making $6 to $8 million. I don't remember the exact number. And no one wanted to trade for him. So don't think there's really much interest in him around the league. And all these guys, just, I mean, yeah, if you're not signed by now, you're probably on a minimum salary anyway. And traditionally, historically, very few players on that salary outside of, you know, the Kelly Oubres from last year and Derek Jones Jr. from last year make like significant impacts on playoff teams. And that's what the Kings are hoping to be. So it matters to those guys. And I see them. I hope for them that it all works out.
I'm sure they appreciate your well wishes. I mean, let's not sneeze at the minimum contract lifestyle, though. You know, you could DeAndre Jordan your way to like 10 or 12 extra million dollars at the end of your career.
Again,
doing that.
I'm going to look in the ISO camera. There's an NBA team that wants to pay me $2 million to spout wisdoms like I'm doing right now in your locker room. I have a literary agent. His name's Joe Perry. Reach out to him. Thank you very much.
I mean, also literally, I mean, like, if an NBA team wants to pay Jake Fisher like that, I mean, we just saw Mike Singer get a gig with the Nuggets.
True. Shout out Mike Singer.
Royce Young with the Thunder, following in the footsteps of the great Lee Jenkins. Shouts out to Lee. This is maybe a new career path for us. Who knows?
But like, I'd be the first media turned locker room guy.
That's true.
No one's done that.
Well, you've been very clear that you're a vibes guy all the way through ever since we started doing this together.
Yeah.
Generally speaking for the Kings, yeah, I mean, you're looking at Keegan Murray's pretty entrenched at the four. If you're going to try to get DeRozan in that mix, he's probably playing the three functionally. So it's like you're looking for somebody to maybe provide you some minutes around like the Jalen McDaniels, Trey Lyles, like, but you know, be another sort of stopgap vet there that you can trust to guard some fours and make threes. Maybe those guys can do that, TBD. But yeah, it's, I think you're looking at more at this is a round out the rotation for, I mean, the deep rotation for a team with playoff aspirations. Similarly, and lastly here, the New York Knicks filled out their training camp roster by agreeing to non-guaranteed deals with forward Marcus Morris Sr. and guard Landry Shamet. The vets are on what are known as Exhibit 9 contracts, which our CBA nerd friends can explain to you all what that means. But generally, it just means they're non-guaranteed with some injury protections for the team if those guys get hurt during training camp. But if either of them makes New York's roster out of camp, they'll probably play on a one-year vet minimum deal. So Knicks taking some veteran flyers, Marcus Morris and Landry Shamet. Does this matter?
It only matters because Marcus Morris has hit a game winner at MSG before.
It's true.
And he will not be afraid of those lights. So I can't speak for Landry Shamet, but Marcus Morris, I believe, if he got dropped into MSG in this Nova Knicks, all this hype season, that dude will not be afraid. I can confidently tell you that. So I think it matters in that regard. That's it.
It's, I mean, also, what better way to add on to the Nova Knicks without actually adding another Villanova player than by getting a guy who got the key to
the Philly guy.
A Philly guy who got the key to the city of Philadelphia just last season. It at least makes sense in that regard. And then also the Knicks, obviously, from a slightly more serious rotation management perspective, Isaiah Hartenstein goes out. They're like, Tom Thibodeau is actually openly talking about maybe playing smaller a little bit, which I wonder if he had like gritted teeth and, you know, someone had to like, you know, point something at his head to make him do that. But I don't know. But the possibility of more Julius Randle at the five, more OG Anunoby at the five, maybe at this point a stretch five is kind of what Marcus Morris's best role is. He actually had a couple of good moments in the playoffs last year for the Cavs, I think. So maybe there's a little bit more juice there. Potentially, but I think if Landry Shamet makes a team, it's going to be because he shot, like, he basically didn't miss a three all camp, and you could always use more shooting with the wings there. Does this matter? I don't know that any of it matters, but what matters next is we're going to take a quick break for some ads, and then we're going to come back for some more divine intervention. Welcome back to Divine Intervention. I am here with Jake Fisher. And before last season on our show, No Cap Room, we decided to have a little bit of fun by picking some alternative over-unders. You know, a lot of shows at this point in the year do which team you think is going to win more or lose more than their over-under title. We wanted to do something a little bit different. So we picked weird stuff like how many games would James Harden play for the Sixers? How many technical fouls would Luka Doncic finish with on the season? And how many threes per game would Jordan Poole launch? Do you remember who got more over-unders right?
How could I forget? It was me.
That's right. Jake beat me 4-3. We had four
best
pushes.
Best of seven.
We had four pushes, but he beat me. I think he came back and beat me in game seven, but
like
nevertheless.
Like the Cavs in 2016.
Just like them, with the sleeves and everything. But because we had fun doing that, we're going to do it again. We each came up with some made-up lines for the 24-25 NBA season. We have kept them secret from one another until this very moment. And Jake, because you are the guest, I'm going to offer you the opportunity. You can choose. It's a heads or tails type situation. Would you like to go first or would you like to receive first? Are you a giver or are you a taker?
I'm definitely a giver. So
you want me to go first?
Well, I feel like giving is giving the line.
Fair enough. Okay. Yeah. So if you would like to go first, if you're ready to go, hit me with it.
So these are all inspired from a place of joy, inspired from a place of No Cap Room inside jokes. A shout out to all the many loyal listeners who have been setting sail with us, traversing the bumpy seas for two calendars now. So, my magic, the brothers Wagner, Banchero Paolo, the man who...
Don't name the roster.
No, I'm saying the man who shocked me by how well he got to the free throw line from the very opening night of his career. Paolo Banchero said on a Sun podcast, I apologize. I think it was something during his China tour with Jordan Brand, with Luka and all those teams. He said that the Magic should be competing for home court in the East this season.
Okay.
I talked to someone with the team, just friendly calls. Catching up. And I said, oh, yeah, like Paolo said that. How does it feel that he put that out there? This guy was like, I mean, we were the 5 seed last year. So let's just spill out that over under 4.5 seed for my Magic.
With all due respect to you and your love for the Wagners and your relationship with Paolo and everything, I'm going to go under. I don't see. Top four for that team. I know.
Remember last year we did this for OKC and you were horribly wrong.
I was horribly wrong. That's true. Oklahoma City had the makings of an elite offense, though, and I don't believe that the Magic do. And that's why, like, they actually were on my list.
You don't believe in KCP?
I believe in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Like, I don't know, like, I believe in functional utilities. Like, you turn the faucet and the water comes on. Like, it is a thing that I believe in and that I trust to function, but it's not changing my life necessarily. Although I suppose if I didn't have running water, I might think differently about it. Nevertheless.
Yeah. Shout out Flint.
Shout out. Yes. Okay. The Magic were on my list as well, but from a slightly different perspective. It was over under 17.5 for their offensive rating.
Oh.
And the reason being...
We went double Magic.
The reason being... Well, you're not going to believe this, Jake. How many did you come up with? How many over-under lines?
Three. I was told to give three.
Yeah, I came up with like 10 because I wasn't sure if we were going to double up.
Okay.
So I was like, it, maybe there will be some opportunities.
I got it. That's good hosting by you.
I mean, I'm a pretty prepared
This is why
host.
I wanted to be on the show. You're so good at it. All I got to do is roll up, be a guest, come into the studio, look pretty. It's great.
I mean, and you do look pretty, but...
Thank you. I got a haircut yesterday, beard trim.
It's great.
Shout out Dustin, Coda. of persons of interest on Havemeyer Street.
I mean, now we're just giving ads away. Like the, but I mean, yes, shouts out to barbers everywhere.
Told me that J.J. Redick used to come bring his son to the Fort Greene location of persons of interest.
See, so. Intel can come from anywhere, everybody.
That's why they call me the people's insider.
It's true. They do. Many of them. Lots of people. Tears in their eyes. Also, my kids hate it when I trim my beard because I look different than I looked when they saw me last, and they get freaked out that I look a little bit different.
Have they ever cried?
No, they put thumbs down. Like, I've seen my children come up on the bus, like from summer camp, with thumbs down, booing out the window, looking at me.
Clip this, John Gennaro. Clip this.
It's brutal. It's it is miserable. And it's why I don't care for them all that much. The Magic have not been...
Wait, why you don't care for your children?
My children, yeah. They're not going to listen to this.
You never know. One day.
I mean, yeah. Just
the internet.
they're huge Ringer NBA show guys. They'll listen to that. The Magic finished 22nd in offensive efficiency last year.
Yeah.
They have not finished higher than 17th since when?
Dwight Howard era.
2011-12, the final year
shout
of Dwight
out
Howard
Nelson.
Being there.
We're just giving shout-outs now.
Absolutely.
Assistant GM of the Delaware Bluecoats.
There you go. So I am skeptical that they are going to be dramatically better offensively. I think that their defense is elite. I think that's legit. I think KCP will only help there. Getting another shooter certainly helps. The jump for them to me is, where does the ball handling come from? Where does the shot creation come from? We know that Paolo and Franz can get downhill. We know that they can hammer the paint, get to the free throw line, shots at the rim. But in terms of creating higher value shots for everybody else, Paolo made a jump there, sort of facilitating out of the post. I don't know if they've got enough to get up into like the league average range offensively.
It's fair.
And I think without a league average offense, they're not going to be able to make that jump. So that's my skepticism.
Well, since this isn't a presidential debate, I'm not going to ask for my time to respond because we have things to do. But I just will give the answer to the question, unlike certain candidates, which is both of them, because both of them didn't answer any questions. I'm not trying to get political here, just a statement and a fact. My answer to my over-under is under, because the Magic are going to be hosting playoff games at the Amway Center. And I will be there. I don't know if I'll be there. But it's a great arena, and I like a lot of people with the org, from the PR department to Jamal Mosley to the players. So, yeah, my Magic, home court advantage.
All right. Well, from your Magic, I'm going to go next to our shared city of residence, our shared area, Brooklyn, New York.
What could you possibly ask me about them?
Cam Thomas points per game average. Over, under. 24.5.
That's great, because in my head I was wondering what you're going to ask. But it turns out the number, and my head went to around 25. So I'm hammering the over.
You're going over on this.
He might be in the 30s. There's no one else on the team who has any green light. I mean, everyone's going to have a green light, but to like break dudes down off the dribble. If I'm forgetting someone, I apologize. But
this is Dennis Schroeder erasure.
Oh, Dennis Schroeder is fun. Actually, I really like Dennis Schroeder, but I don't expect him to be in Brooklyn very long. I think he'll probably be, and this is more of like a educated assumption than like I've heard the Nets are actively shopping Dennis Schroeder.
Right.
To be clear, aggregators, please don't aggregate that.
They're not going
to
aggregate Divine Intervention. Don't worry about it.
I'm on it, so they might.
That's true.
And not to be presumptuous or arrogant, that's just kind of how it goes.
How
you
it
can't
works,
even
right?
sneeze and without people thinking, oh, someone told Jake Fisher to sneeze. So, yeah, I think Cam Thomas is going to be pushing to the 30s. That's my, yeah.
I get where you're coming from.
So like Cam Cook.
The reason I went with 24 and a half is that he averaged just over 24 after the trade deadline last year. So when they...
Spicy.
So, and then the guy who was second in scoring and shot attempts per game to
went,
him
went
there.
Across the bridge.
Went across the bridge.
Yeah.
And then the guy that was second to Cam Thomas in usage rate was Lonnie Walker, and he's also not on the team
I wonder
anymore.
What bridge, I will ask him this at one point in time. The first time Mikal Bridges entered the island of Manhattan after being traded from Brooklyn, I wonder which one he took.
I
maybe,
he was,
maybe he took a tunnel.
I mean, he was in the back of a black car. He was not paying attention to which bridge he was. He was
he might
his
know.
Phone. He may maybe he does. Know. Maybe he does. It's a question worth asking. The Cam Thomas question is worth asking, if only because I don't know how often we are going to talk about the Brooklyn Nets this season. I think the main argument for is, as you said, there's kind of nobody else, and the Brooklyn Nets, after getting their draft pick back, really have no reason to try to be good. So why not just let him cook? It's the old Jordan Crawford with the Wizards argument of like, who else going to shoot? But Super producer John Gennaro brings up a reasonable question. Have we not learned from our hubris on the Jordan Poole predictions with the Wizards last year?
It's very fair. It's
where
very
we were
fair.
Talking about, like, how many, how what would his scoring be? How many shot attempts would he end?
One difference is that Jordan Poole wasn't coming from an awful, you know, getting exiled from the Golden Kingdom situation to, like, pretend to build something sustainable in Washington. Cam was drafted there. He's, like, preceded all this. The front office definitely, like, believes in him to some degree because they picked him.
Right.
So it wasn't just, like, the salary and the trade asset coming back to Washington and, like, a Chris Paul reroute after a Bradley Beal thing. So that's my counterpoint.
Well, I'm going to go with under just because of the hubris.
George Soros, that's my counterpoint.
George Soros is your counterpoint. All right.
Well, I was directing that to the debate moderator. That was a callback joke.
All right. I mean, great work. I'm gonna go with under because I think that
imagine if we were in studio for all this stuff.
It would have been doofy as hell. It would have been doofy as hell. All right. So you're over. You think he's gonna lead the league in scoring. I'm under, and I think something might go wrong.
We disagreed on both.
Imagine this, something going wrong for the Brooklyn Nets. Who among us could have foreseen? Jake, give me a second one.
Uh-huh. Okay. So I am going back to the lore of our show as I look at my phone. And there are even more people texting me about what we learned during the break. So, we're bringing this to my Bulls, Chicago Bulls.
How many my... All right. Anyway,
there's just two. We had two. We had my Magic and my Bulls.
And then it's your Sixers. There's a lot. Anyway, go ahead. Your Bulls. Your Bulls.
They were my Sixers when I was a child.
Basically a child.
Did I ever tell a story to you? It's very brief of when I relinquished my Sixers fandom when I knew it happened.
Did you like go to the top of a mountain and scream it or like what happened?
No, I was in Barclays Center at the draft in 2015, 3 years in of covering Hinkie's process era. They picked Jahlil Okafor number 3, which again, after Nerlens Noel in 2013, after Joel Embiid in 2014. And everyone's like, another center? And I just shrugged and I went, best player available. Like I put myself in the most detached analysis brain, putting myself in Sam Hinkie's shoes and was like, I care more about covering this team than I do about rooting for it. That was the moment. My Bulls, Lonzo Ball played 34, I'm guessing, because I'm not reading my own notes well, roughly 30-ish games in his first year, 21-22, when he led the Chicago Bulls to the number one seed in the Eastern Conference before devastating knee injuries. He purports to be back. He's doing pods with this guy, Demo. Over under Lonzo Ball, 35 games for Chicago this year.
Oof. This is after two straight knee seasons lost to knee injury. He has, you know, this time last year, we were wondering if you could literally stand up in a chair.
Well, we weren't. Stephen A. Smith was.
Fair enough. But I'm going to go up just for the pure vibes of this. I'm going to go over. I'm going to say I want it to
That's
be
the right
true.
Answer.
That he plays more than 35 games because Lonzo obviously has never panned out into the kind of pro that we hoped he would be coming out of UCLA.
He was panning out.
Right. All right.
Trying to pan out and start trying to pan in.
what I'm saying is, though, like, he's the number two pick in the draft, right? And so...
Deuce is wild, as LeVar would tell you.
I'm sure he would. But the idea being, like, you draft somebody there, you hope that they are going to hit and be a superstar, right?
Yeah.
And what I think we've seen, or the best versions of Lonzo Ball that we have seen, is really, like, an elite complementary player. The star in your role kind of role player. Like when he was healthy in New Orleans and he actually got the three-point shot online and the volume up, and he was that hit-ahead monster feeding Zion, right?
A not-on-the-billboard version of Tyrese Halliburton.
I think that's a fair way to look at it, right? Like somebody who is like fuel injects your offense and gets you moving faster, but also whereas Halliburton is somebody that, and obviously he makes up for it by just how great he is offensively, is someone who has to be, you know, maneuvered around on the defensive end. Lonzo, an excellent on-ball defender and off-ball defender, where the best version of that Bulls team was him and Caruso wreaking havoc at the top, deflections and steals, getting the transition game going. So I would not anticipate that level of productivity and impact coming off two straight missed seasons, but the idea of him at whatever, 27, like getting back on the floor and being able to play at least half a healthy season, I want to believe in it. So I'm going to say over on that.
Yeah, I agree. Over. Lonzo, we're rooting for you, buddy. We're rooting for you.
I had a Bulls 1-2.
Wow.
again, because similarly to the Nets thing, I don't know how often I'm going to talk about the Bulls this season, so I might as well get it out now.
Get it out quick.
Zach LaVine games as a member of the Bulls this season, over under 49.5.
Do you know from being the homer kid how many games there are before the trade deadline?
Their 50th game comes on February 5th.
I know you have the answer. I'm going to say over because I am going to say that he will not be traded. Well, February 5th is before the trade deadline.
Yeah, the trade deadline this year is February 6th.
I should have known that from the Larry Markkinen extension August 6th, six-month thing that we talked about so ad nauseum.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk.
This is a really hard one. This is like a really good one.
I'm really good at this.
That's why I wanted to be a guest.
There you go.
Oh, because it's also like there's the health thing, then there's the trade thing. It's like a double whammy of unknown factors.
Let me remove the injury part for you. I'm not saying games played. I'm saying games as a member of the Bulls. He is on the Bulls roster. He is a member of the
team. That takes it down from like BC calculus to like trigonometry.
There you go. I flunked BC calculus, so that's where I feel most comfortable living. I write for a living now. That's why.
People don't know I was actually a math whiz back in the day.
Of course you were.
I'm pretty talented.
Yeah, just to ask you.
Yeah. Ask certain people, they'll disagree. This is a dramatic,
incredible podcast. Wonderful audio.
I really don't think people are going to like be like, all of a sudden, Zach LaVine did things in 50 games to want to trade for him at a plus value, and I don't think the Bulls will move him at anything below like fair. So I'm just going to say over. I think he will, and I think it could be more palatable when it's next offseason and the deal is further towards expiring. So I'm saying over.
I'm just going to say under because game theory. All right, Jake, you went from your Magic to your Bulls. I could piggyback on that. Do you want me to go again and then you drill over your last one?
I'm still getting more text messages about the news.
Stop.
I'm going to keep it with the Bulls because my other thing is still on my Bulls. So, because to me, one of the best jokes of the show's history is we talked about the beautiful, insightful knowledge that Pat Beverly does and doesn't do certain things before playing. He's now in Israel.
It's true. He's not in the league anymore.
However, could come back. Plenty of overseas outs and contracts, all right. That type of stuff. Veteran, playoff know-how, post-trade deadline, buyout market, maybe he makes his way in there.
Maybe more rinsed than washed.
Yeah. So the over-under is, and let me finish the whole over-under. Over-under, 0.5 games back in the NBA from Israel that he doesn't have sex before. Because he says he doesn't have sex before any game. Will he change his ways after being in Israel?
Okay. So a couple things going on here in my head. One is I just want to make sure I have the wording of the question right.
Yes.
Games back from Israel. So we're
just back in the NBA.
We are presuming he is back in the NBA for the purpose of this over-under. Yes. I'm going to go under. I don't think he's coming back this season. I think that we have reached the point of no return with Pat Bev where at his age, at what he brings to the table.
With his antics.
I think that I think we have bid farewell to Patrick Beverly as an NBA character. Now, as a like media, member, somebody who will continue to make content and perhaps show up on networks at some point soon, I think that's totally open. But I do not think we're going to see Pat Bev back in the league this season.
I'm going to say over because if Isaiah Thomas can get like a 10-day deal from Charlotte, like 5 years after asking for one, I think there's a chance that Daryl Morey or someone who's had him previously will just bring him in for a minimum contract.
Doc winds up looking for another, perimeter point of attack guy.
So, yeah.
All right. you just really wanted to get back to Pat Bev doesn't have sex before games. And briefly led to like the most sustained success the Bulls have had since Lonzo Ball got hurt, basically.
Coincidence?
I think not. All right, so Jake, how nerdy do you want me to get with my third and final? Because there's a few options here.
The answer is turn the nerd all the way up.
All right. You're going to regret this.
I will not.
Domantas Sabonis total screen assists.
Ooh!
Over under 499.5.
What do you have last year?
Led the league with 488.
Hammer the
no,
over.
Nobody has hit 500 since. Take a guess. Wild guess. Who screens a bunch?
Oh, my God.
Has a style of screen named after him.
Gortat.
Marcin Gortat in 2015-2016. So we're coming up on a decade since somebody had 500 in a season. Even Rudy Gobert, the guy that they basically made the whole thing for, hasn't gotten a 500.
Well, look, real followers of the NC Armada and my particular career will remember I spent a week in Sacramento early in the Light the Beam days, blown away by Sabonis' screen synergy with Kevin Herter and then De'Aaron Fox and doing things different with Keegan Murray. Now he's got another guy and DeMar DeRozan to screen for. Plus, people who have played pickup with me will know that my game expands beyond.
How long did it take to get to his pickup game, folks? That's what we really wanted to know.
My game expands beyond the pretty jump shot that has clipped and been on Twitter. I really love to just set angular screens that, you know, allows a guy to rock. So I have appreciation for the dark arts of screen assists. So, yeah, I will say over if nothing but to further encourage Domantas Sabonis, whose Lithuanian national team jersey I have after my father bought it on a work trip to Lithuania.
Wow, very kind.
And the Lithuanian national team PR guy, I forget his name, I'm really sorry, was very kind to me in setting up a one-on-one with Jonas Valanciunas during my intrepid days at Manila. So shout out all Lithuanians out there, and shout out to Domantas Sabonis for screening his men open.
I mean, really the biggest question is just how many screen assists are going to show up on Starting Five, the new Netflix show that will feature Domantas Sabonis. Maybe I should have adjusted.
One of those guys doesn't belong in that show. It's Domantas Sabonis.
A little bit, but you know, you got to balance the scales a little bit.
With screens.
Balance the screens. Also, I lied. I'm going to do two more quick ones.
Oh my God.
You're going to give
you
quick
answers.
You can't
do anything quick on a podcast.
I'm going to try. Victor Wembanyama 5x5 games.
Again, how many did he have last year?
Well, over-under is 2.5. He had one, but he was close in a bunch of others.
I'll say over because I think many people think the Spurs are going to be better than they're going to be. And I think as they continue to be in this laboratory thing, I think he will just be put in positions to stretch his incredible wingspan in literal and metaphorical ways. So over.
I think over is a good pick because nobody has ever gotten more than two in a single season. I believe it was Hakeem Olajuwon and Andre Kirilenko. And
shout out Mir and Fader.
Absolutely. And if nothing else, what is Victor Wembanyama if not somebody who is like setting new historical standards, right? So I think the idea that he would be the first person to get three in a season is a good bet. And then I don't love this one, but I like it's just from the purposes of content creation. Bronny James total NBA minutes as a rookie. Over under 499.5.
Oh, I was expecting it to be like around 100. So I'm going to say 499, 80 games.
It's really, it becomes more of a question of like how much time do you think he's going to spend actually with the Lakers as opposed to with the G League team or, you know.
I'm going to say under. We put a lot of optimism on LA's past prodigal son, Lonzo Ball. And then the yin and yang, I'm going to say under.
Just to balance yourself out there.
That's what I'm trying to do a lot these days.
All right. I'm going to go over just for the sake of game theory again. But realistically, the odds are against him. Since 2018, so five drafts, 62 players have been drafted 50th or later. Only 8 of them have played more than 500 minutes as a rookie. 3 of them were last season, though, so maybe that, you know, it was TJD in Golden State, Tumani Kamara with the Blazers, Jalen Wilson with the Nets. So maybe there is a, you know, there's an opportunity there. There have been some seasons where there have been multiple rookies drafted in the bottom 10 of the second round that get it. None of them have the thumb on the scale of LeBron James is my dad, but I think, yeah. So balancing it out, I think we'll say Jake goes under, I go over. We've gone over a lot here, and we're going to take one more quick break before we get back with the closing five. Stick around for some more divine intervention. Welcome back to Divine Intervention. I'm here with Jake Fisher, and we are going to wrap up with something that we call the closing five on this show, because as I'm sure you know, Jake, how you start is not nearly as important as how you finish.
Not only do I know, this is the segment that I've been most looking forward to. So don't fuck it up.
All right. Five questions with our illustrious guest. Question the first. If I counted right, this is the 64th podcast that we have recorded together.
Oh, wow.
Since No Cap Room started in March 2023. So not counting the test shows and the, you know, chemistry tests and the pilot and whatever. Mm-hmm. What would you say is the best part of making a show with me?
As I said to senior NFL producer Charles Robinson on an internal call, when we were trying to figure this out and whatever, and I was anointed as the host, and Dan was my co-host of No Cap Room, not this show, I asked one J.E. Skeets for help on how to be a good host because I thought he did it in a way that not only was like official, but like chill and fun.
Right.
And I don't even remember what advice he gave me, to be honest.
So
but
you really,
I remember,
so you really I remember, soaked in what Skeets gave
you. Well, I remember just like in therapy, every time I have had a talk therapy session, I try to take one thing, one pearl from that to carry forward. And the thing I did take away was make Dan laugh and then you will laugh.
Right.
And then all the listeners will laugh. And that's just like a very nice thing. So I will take, I will try to take that. I have tried to take that into conversations, lengthy and short and unrecorded.
There's worse things in the world than making somebody laugh, right? Like it does seem to sort of make everything a little bit easier. Sub question, what is the worst part of making a show with me?
The worst part is, if I can peel back the curtain.
Yeah, we're here. There's no curtain, but there is a screen.
You never know on a certain
behind it.
Wednesday or Thursday between 9 and 11 a.m. how your person that you record podcast with is going to be feeling. And it's always been a bummer when, just like, you know, with any type of partner, to turn on that screen and just see Dan is not having a good day.
Yeah, a little bit stressed out.
But to spin it positive, it's been nice to then see how the mood changes by the end.
Yeah. No, that's fair. Like, you can only, when you're working together with somebody, you got to be able to bounce off them and you got to trust them to bounce off you. And so the energy that somebody, the other person brings into the, you know, the process goes a long way toward determining how successful it is. And yeah, there are absolutely times where we have been like ready to turn on the cameras and I have not been in a great headspace, which we might get back to in a little bit, but that's completely fair. So we already talked about some members of my family that aren't watching. Sarah, you're not watching either, but Jake had the same kind of note that you have sometimes. Number two, you can sit down with one NBA-related person for an interview, player, coach, exec, whatever, and they have to be honest with you. They have to answer your questions. Who are you sitting down?
Well, this is sad because the answer for a long, long time was Bill Walton. So that's a bummer. Ooh. NBA-related, and they have to...
They got
to
be honest with you, and they got to answer. They can't just say, like, I'm not going to say that.
I mean, I'll just say LeBron. It's, like, cliche, but I would talk to him about everything that's, like, not ball. Like, the hardest thing in my life as a professional has been navigating being, like, a quote-unquote public figure.
Sure.
Which is just a weird, unnatural thing to do. This guy's been doing it since he was, like, 14.
Yeah.
And he's done it so well. And even when he knows he's getting clowned, you know, the first book page thing he just put out the other day.
Right.
Like, I used to be so over him as, like, a personality. And, like, I'm all the way back in just because of, like, the dadness and how he's been able to make fun of himself type stuff. And also how, like, he just still is incredible. While, like, maintaining the professionalism and arguably becoming better as a public figure is just, like, wild. Like, what a achievement of just, like, humanity, let alone talent. So I would love to just talk to him about his, like, life that we don't see and how he's able to exist in that space to then create the life that we do see.
Right. And to be able to do it consistently for... You know, more
not go insane.
Well, that's that your description of that made me think of that. It was like Ta-Nehisi Coates on Obama, I think, where it's like he walked on ice for 8 years and never slipped. And so that idea of
I thought you were starting to say that Obama like would walk on ice like in a literal like meditation, but not what it was. I was like, that is interesting.
Yeah, no, I was at Jamal Murray doing the dribbling drills on ice or barefoot or whatever. But no, the idea that everyone is sort of prepared for you to slip or fall, or maybe even creating opportunities for you to do it, and you just don't, to do that over that extended period of time, while also like, you know, raising children and finding time and finding energy and
which I don't do
all of those sorts of things. Yeah. So
wait, speaking of quick. Just because.
Yeah.
What's the best part and the worst part about doing the shows with me?
I mean, it sounds like sort of hacky that the answer is a little bit of the inverse. Like your consistent energy throughout the whole process has been like, let's try to make this as fun as we can. Let's find a way, even if it is a morning where we, you know, you are, you know, after the trade deadline, you haven't slept in 3 days, or it's, you know, we were, you know, going right after a game through like the finals when it was after a game through the press availability, had to do a show right afterward. You were like very committed to finding the fun. So I think that is a really fun way to make a show with somebody on, especially on a day when you don't have it, knowing that somebody else is going to be there to kind of give you that kick in the ass is useful for sure. The worst part is that you just don't do stuff in the rundowns, like you don't add notes or like I'm sure it is, but then I don't know what's coming. So I'm out here doing homework.
Well, that's like part of the fun fun guy mindset, and part of making you laugh has always been don't tell you certain things to save it up for the pod,
which is
or
true.
Also like
don't do the show before
the
show.
One
right?
On, yeah. Yeah.
Shouts out to Gons. Don't do the show before the show was one of my friend John Gonzalez's notes for me forever. Don't do the show before the show. Speaking of shows, question number three, what was the last live performance you saw? Music, theater, comedy, whatever.
I'm not counting the Eagles game.
Well, I mean, it was a performance of a kind.
It was not a good one. Well, my next ones, I know I have Jess Glynn on October 1st, which I've never seen before, and she is one of my favorites of all time. I'm really excited for that one. But in the past, I think, I went to ARC Festival Labor Day weekend, and the last set I saw was Disclosure, shutting it all down. And I got two Disclosure finales because they were the headliner of like the day set, which like ARC Festival is in Union Park in Chicago, and there's like a city ordinance noise complaint situation. So like they have to shut it down at 10, which like in the spirit of like the festival, boo. But in the spirit of the festival, they have like an incredible infrastructure of like all these after parties that are like sanctioned by the festival all across the city. So we got a 2-hour closing set, which by the way paid a little bit to have the VIP band, and then the VIP section, which isn't like anything special, it's just like a fence, and then you have, but the only thing that was special is that they have a floor, so like if it rains it doesn't get muddy.
Yeah.
And where we just randomly were at the end of it all, the floor was kind of bouncy. And it became kind of like a trampoline, which was awesome.
I'm so much older than you.
And then they closed again at the end of the last night, of the afters. And Disclosure is just like probably my favorite DJ group of all time. So to see them twice in one day, closing twice in one day, was sweet. Yeah.
My sub question there was going to be like, are you at all surprised to learn that I don't know who the hell Disclosure is?
You don't know who Disclosure is?
No.
When the fire starts to burn.
I mean, shouts out to those men. I'm sure they're men.
There's two.
Men. Well, that's wonderful. I'm sure that they're great, and I'm glad you had a good time with it. And
they're coming back here soon. Maybe I'll convince you to come.
Yeah, you probably won't convince me to come. Also, just really the people's insider now. Maybe the VIP, the very important person's insider. Like maybe paying a little extra for the
bracelet.
That
is very un-people's insider of me. Mm. However, I will say skeptical. I did go around the festival in certain aspects. Because, you know, you can be anyone you want to be in the festival fairy Never Never Leverland. I did introduce myself.
You have said this to me as like a fact of reality. Like, yeah, when you show up to the festival, you can have whatever personality you want. And that blew my mind. Like, I would never think that I would be like, I'm going to go there and I'm going to be like the Hulk for 3 days. I don't know.
Good. I mean, I met this guy one time whose name was Marty the Mailbox. He had a totem, you know, the things you hold up in the crowd. And usually it's
deeply uncomfortable with Marty the Mailbox. All right, let's go.
Why?
It's the idea of somebody walking around with a mailbox for 3 days where it's muddy. I don't know. Everything about it feels
It was really lovely because, so the thing I trade is I bring glow sticks. I bring 100 glow sticks a day.
Of course you do.
Largely to throw and give. But also, I don't want to touch anyone. You can tap someone.
Smart.
you can tap someone on a shoulder with a glow stick.
Yeah.
Which is pretty nice. So I go up to this guy, Mart, at the mailbox, because I saw the flag on the mailbox was up. So I said, hey, do you have any mail for me? This guy's face lit up like a jack-o'-lantern. He was like, in fact, I have mail for anyone who asks.
And of course he does. He's Marty the Mailbox.
In the spirit of Marty the Mailbox, when a couple people asked me who I was in this festival, I said, I'm the people's insider.
Did anyone have any idea what that meant to you?
Okay. No. But then I like interviewed some people, like, where are you from? Blah, blah, blah. And I had some like really lovely conversations with total strangers. And it was nice. Yeah.
What does being the people's insider mean to you?
Was that question four?
It was an old question. So yeah, we're moving through it. It's a sub question. I'm asking too many questions now, but it's
so
fine.
Look, like the word, and I talked about this on a basketball feelings episode with our friend Katie Heindel, which the episode you—
Shouts out to Katie.
Which the episode you engineered. The label insider, I have always resisted because I think it's some type of bastardization of the multimedia aspect that journalism has become.
Okay.
And the title senior NBA reporter has always just been pretty sick to me anyway. But like Kevin Durant with the Slim Reaper and what have you, the people did give me the nickname. So I'm trying to embrace it. I think what it means to me and why I think they anointed me with it is because like the role of journalism is for the people.
Right. Inform the people.
And like, sure, there's tons of things I either tweet or write or say on a show that can sort of function as like a bit of an advertisement to MBA people to be like, I know this. And if you'd like me to know something different, or if you'd like me to know more, or if you'd like to know what I know that I'm not saying, this is what I got. But like in the spirit of the job, you write and report and say things on a microphone for the people. My allegiances are to them, and I try to bring information to them in ways that are equitable with the people who have the information to not F their bread up.
Right.
So that's what I've tried to do since the beginning when Bleacher Report, shout out Chris Trenchard, asked me to be, the title was Rumors Reporter, and I said,
Could I not have that be the title? Yeah.
Yeah. Let me like try to actually do this thing. And I called like 15 people on the league and said like, hey, can I call you every week and ask you what everyone's talking about? And like definitely the job, I think, especially here, you know, I used to get a lot of angry phone calls during my time at Bleacher Report. I got one angry phone call in these last 2 years writing here. And it was very early. It was, I won't say who it was from, but in the interest of the people, give a little tidbit. It was in the aftermath of reporting on Brooklyn firing Steve Nash and trying to bring in Ime Udoka and other people and et cetera, et cetera. And I believed in that moment that I served the people and did my duties to all the people involved in the actual firing and hiring of Steve Nash and his eventual replacement, interim coach Jacques Vaughn. But I still had this angry phone call. And I was like, you know what? Like, that doesn't make me feel good. I'm going to make sure no matter what, I do what I have to do to give the people what they want and need, while also being fair to the people who have the info and whose lives are involved. And truth be told, I have not had an angry phone call since then, which is a long time.
Yeah, that's a while ago now.
I just try to be a nice guy.
Imagine that, a nice guy in this industry. Yeah. You're never going to make it. Question number four, actual number four. A few months ago, you presented me with a highlight package of footage from your rec league basketball.
That I haven't already mentioned on the show.
Yeah, you've already mentioned it. So we got here a lot earlier than I intended. And you had me analyze it live on the podcast so that I could compliment you.
Well, I didn't. I think John Gennaro did. I think I wanted to just introduce the idea of putting out my rec league highlights to, yes, from a little place of ego, be like, yeah, I can kind of ball a little bit.
So my first question was going to be, how does it feel to not have shame? And my second question—
I've never had shame in my whole life.
My second was going to be, did you hear from anyone in the league about that?
Yeah. I mean, look, I have definitely developed a lot of connections through playing pickup with team people. And a lot of it has just been that I don't suck. Don't get me wrong. Right. Anytime I played pickup with people who work in the NBA, I am the worst person on the court.
Right.
But knowing your role, starring a role, I set a lot of Domantas Sabonis screen assists in that capacity and hit wide open corner threes. That's it.
You can get a long ways playing that way, yeah.
You can get a long ways playing that. So, yeah, I think that's just always been my approach to my playing ability as it pertains to my current livelihood. Yeah.
But the fact that you were like, I want to make sure that we talk about this on the show and put this out on social media, did anybody in the league go like, I mean, you know, take it easy?
No, because I think I was showing how limited I was in that skill set at the same
time. Fair enough. So it's like, yeah, it is an ego stroke, but it's also like there's a little bit of humility.
The ego stroke is look how not bad I am. It's not saying I'm good.
There you go.
Yeah.
Question number five. On Divine Intervention, we try to emphasize...
Excuse me. I'm really offended you just asked me question number five and not question the fifth.
Okay, fair enough. Question the fifth. On Divine Intervention, we try to emphasize the importance of taking care of yourselves in times of stress. Mm-hmm. Because ball, contrary to popular belief, is not life.
It is definitely not life.
So what constitutes self-care for Jake Fisher? What do you do to get away from all
this? Oh, a lot of inhaling and exhaling in many capacities. I really like bike riding. At the peak, I'd say, of my success at Bleacher Report, I put on the literal loudest outfit I had to make sure I did not get injured, because I said out loud, today'd be a really bad day to get hit on my bike. And that's not what happened.
Yeah.
There was a car in the bike lane, and drivers of New York City, unless you are unloading a handicapped person and that is the only place to get them out of the car, don't double park in the bike lane, because then people like me have to look over my shoulder behind me to see if any cars are going so I can go out into the road. My tire got caught in a manhole. I flipped on my back. Fortunately, I was okay. But since that moment, because I got lunch with someone that we both know, I'll say that to protect them, People's Insider, last Friday, and he said, oh, is bike riding a way for you to get a lot of stress out? And I said, it used to be. I used to try to go as fast as I could for like to chase the workout. But now my favorite part of bike riding is when you aren't pedaling and just cruising downhill.
Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah.
The exhilaration of it, you know, as long as, I mean.
It's very joyful. Wind in your hair. I like to ride at sunset a lot because, you know, I'm not so far from the North Brooklyn waterfront where there's a really nice protected bike lane. So there aren't any cars in the bike lane. You should be ticketed for parking in the bike lane. That is a political statement I will make here on this show.
That's great. As long as you don't go back to the George Soros component, I think we're probably fine.
Wait, is George Soros not the... If I got that wrong, I'm sorry. I thought he was the ABC News guy.
No, he's not.
Who is George Soros?
He's the guy, he's like the billionaire that they know many right-wing conservatives say is like secretly funding all of the things that they don't like. He's like the...
Well, then it still counts. I was directing something to a very political power player.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Who's the guy, the really handsome guy who did the from ABC News? I thought his. That's George Stephanopoulos. But that's not the guy I was thinking. The guy who did the debate two Tuesdays ago, I thought was George Soros. For clarification,
it's worth going back to this bit. So the last thing that we do on Divine Intervention is a weekly recommendation. Mm-hmm. So does not have to be about basketball. Does not have to be about basketball in any way for our listeners and viewers that are going back to it. Just something cool and good that you think would be of interest for the people that you want to put out in the world. So, Jake Fisher, what is your weekly recommendation?
My first one's a bit, but it's nice. I really recommend doing a podcast with Dan Devine.
Oh, stop.
My second thing, because in the spirit of the People's Insider, everyone living in the greater context of the New York City metropolitan area and is somewhat up on media probably has already heard of the wonders that is Oh Mary, a show by Cole Estrella.
Oh,
if I'm
yeah.
pronouncing that incorrectly, I apologize.
Escola.
Cole Escola. I'm sorry.
Anyway, yeah.
Phenomenal performer. Tour de force was the word I used to describe it to the friend who recommended it to me. But what I recommend is not just going to the show. What I recommend is when you get there, there's a bar right when you walk in. And this is also a recommendation for any type of going out and you're looking to consume a beverage. The first bar you see is not the bar you want to wait in line at. This even counts at a wedding. When you get opened into, try to find the furthest bar. There's never a line. I'm going to tell you where the best bar, where the furthest bar is. You already have this clue. Make a left when you walk in the Lyceum Theater. Go down the stairs to where the men's room is. There is a half flight of stairs down where no one is getting a drink. That is the recommendation. Don't just go to O'Mary. Go to the bar that is the furthest bar where there is no line.
That's like recommendationception. You kind of double tap. Okay. You double tap that one where there is, you know, there's a cultural object there. Also, now I'm so psyched out about saying the actor, the performer's name right. Cole Escola, I believe, phenomenal in Search Party as well, which played a role in the show.
I was not totally familiar with Cole's work until I read the playbill, and the one thing that really registered in my head, like this makes sense, was they had a big role on one of Amy Sedaris's productions. Which
sure.
There's a lot of nonsense in both.
Yeah. So,
good, great nonsense. Controlled nonsense. Mm-hmm. Smart nonsense.
Sub-recommendation there. If you haven't seen Strangers with Candy, Amy Sedaris's old Comedy Central show, Strangers with Candy was wonderful.
And also, if I may.
Yeah, go for it. We're almost out of here. Go for it.
I did not get the drink for myself. I got it for my partner's father there in town. I had heard in my ears, I'm going down the stairs, the bar's closing. And I heard his wife, my lady's mother, say, sorry, can't get a drink for you. What do I do when I come back to the seats? Here's your $19 small. I don't know what the medium and the large is priced at. A small glass of red wine, $19. That's also a helpful tip.
Yeah, I mean, other recommendation is get the hell out of New York. All right. Okay.
And your whole life.
That's true. I mean,
you're not taking your own recommendations.
I know.
I abide by the recommendations that I give.
I should at some point.
What's yours?
Along those lines, I'm going to go to the ISO camera for this one. It's not a rant, but it's something that I need to say. I've recommended a lot of things on this show, ranging from David Fincher's Zodiac to the song WTF is Sleep by the band Warriors, to reading literally any book and making little faces at a baby.
I prefer if you're going to read a book, make it Built to Lose.
Well, I mean, Jake's allowed to recommend that if he wants to.
Thank you.
Which also, I made a little faces at a baby in an elevator today. Great stuff. Babies love bits.
I held a random lady's dog on the subway ride here because she asked me to. And I said, I'm a dog dad. It's okay.
That's very good. Shouts out to arugula. Shouts out to arugula. Now, though, I need you to park in the corner and wait for the ball.
All right.
It's okay. Today's recommendation is to try something that scares you. Like, for example, starting a self-help podcast about basketball. When I came back to Yahoo 2 years ago, I told my bosses, like similar to what Jake mentioned earlier, I wanted to be involved in the podcast plans, but I didn't want to start my own show. I wanted to be part of a team. I didn't want to do it solo. When Brett Rader, the head of podcasts here at Yahoo Sports, approached me about maybe trying to start my own thing, I was reluctant. I've been writing for a long time, but I had a lot less experience on mic and on camera. And the idea of making my own show from my own point of view felt like a really vulnerable position to be in. Because at the risk of being blunt, a hell of a lot more of these things fail than succeed. And if you're part of a group effort that doesn't work, well, that sucks. But like everybody shares the L and it makes it a little easier to move on. When you start something that has your name in the title and your face front and center and your voice being the one you hear most, and it comes almost entirely from the inside of your own head, if that doesn't work out, then it's not the project that failed. It's you. I didn't want that. So I tried really, really hard to make this thing good, to book great guests and to come up with fun segment ideas and hunt for jokes like we talked about, and to prepare enough for each episode that I wasn't cheating the listener. That was something I was really, really worried about. I wanted you to come to the show and think, Dan's not cheating me. But I didn't want to cheat anything else either. So I kept my writing workload the same as it was and kept co-hosting No Cap Room and kept parenting two kids and having a wife. And then we got to May, and it was the second round of the playoffs, and I just didn't sleep for 4 days straight. And that was me trying to check every box and maybe missing some along the way. And I'm Brooklyn Irish Catholic. I have a little enough amount of regard for myself that I would just keep doing something that hurts me. But my bosses figured something had to give, and this is that something. This is going to be the last episode of Divine Intervention, and I'm going to be honest. That feels a lot like failure. And I am kind of, you know, a little bit bummed out and ashamed by that. But it feels a little bit less like a failure when I think about what we've made. And I think about the episodes that we've had, the incredible guests who were gracious enough to share some of their time with me, and how mind-blowing I found it that like thousands of people were checking this thing out every week that came out of my head. And maybe most important of all, that like how much I laughed making this show. The thing that I was scared about, that I was scared of happening, happened. And that sucks. But I will always have made this show. I will always have made it this way with this tone and this style. And it exists. It exists in the world. We'll be able to go back and see it. And I will always know that it happened. And I think that's rad as hell. And it wouldn't exist in the world if I had let myself stop myself. So something scares you, go ahead and give it a try. You're probably going to be glad that you did, and you're not going to regret it. So that's going to do it for Divine Intervention. Like, for real. This is it. That's the end of it. Thank you so much to Jake Fisher for spending some time with me and the Divine Intervention audience. Thank you so much to super producer John Gennaro, who did everything he could over the past year to make this show look and sound good. And I think that's about it. Thank you so much for listening, and take care of yourself. You deserve it.